You're on 121.5, the emergency frequency.
Welcome to the 21.5 Show, a podcast for professional pilots by professional pilots. Join Dylan and Max, both with experience in flight instruction, the airlines, and business aviation, as they talk to a variety of industry experts, share stories, and have a little fun along the way.
Welcome back to another episode of the 21.5
Not just another episode.
No?
It's the 50th episode of the 21.5 Show.
I was feeling old today when I got out of bed.
That's actually staggering.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that until about a second and a half before you hit the record button.
We're here.
I read it. That's
crazy. It's also, we're also celebrating the 50 contractors that are currently working in your backyard that you're going to hear about throughout the episode. Of course, we scheduled interviews and everything today, and there's guys with saws and hammers. And
yeah, if anyone's curious, that is the sound of a hammer pounding in a roofing nail. So.
Yeah, it's good. It brings authenticity to the show. So welcome back.
A couple of guys, a couple of working stiffs, you know.
Just do what we can do when we can do it.
When we can do it.
All right, another great show for all the professional pilots out there. My name is Dylan. I'm joined by my co-host, Max. We are both professional pilots. Today, ULCC is going to be the main topic that we talk about. Very hot in the industry today. Because they're the ones hiring.
A lot of attention.
Funny how that works. I'm sure in a little bit it'll be all cargo. So, you know, but that's what the folks want to hear about. So we're going to bring Jason Duvarney in to chat a little bit about that. He is a ULCC pilot and a recruiter. He does interview prep. He does all sorts of stuff. So he's got some really unique perspective.
Not to mention a podcast host.
Yeah, that's right. So a very well-rounded airman and a lot of good perspective for folks that are trying to get more information, because I think a lot of people are maybe reassessing what their career goals are these days and what they how they define the destination job. So we'll get into all that. So before we get too far into the show here, I have a little bit of a, I want to call it a public service announcement because it sounds nicer than a rant. I don't know.
If this has to do with memes, I'm
no, it
out.
Doesn't. It does have to do with being online, though. So I'm going to try.
Should we get Roy on the phone, or are you good?
So I'm going to try some public service announcement music. Let me see. Are you a pilot online applying for jobs? I have something to tell you. If you're randomly applying for online jobs, you need to be able to check two of the three boxes to even have a chance. A, you need to be typed in the airplane you're applying for. B, you need to be local. And C, you need to know someone at the operation. If you can't check two of those boxes, it's not going to happen.
Quit wasting everybody's time.
That's not 100%
true. Very encouraging, Dylan.
Yeah.
I'm glad you brought that to the listeners. I'm sure they really appreciate that.
So there's a lot of online job postings, especially on ProPilot World. All the ones in Phoenix, I usually try and comment on and try and add more color to the jobs, because usually, you know, we have a pretty good network here. We usually know what the deal is about these jobs. What ends up happening is I get a ton of messages from people. Oh, I haven't heard back. Oh, I did it. You know, what? You know, it's a flight instructor in Florida that wants to fly a 7X. It's, you know, a Hawker pilot that's trying to go fly a G550 that doesn't know anyone. Like, I don't know why people are so surprised they're not hearing back on a lot of these jobs. We talked to James O'Neill about this in a complete episode, which we titled "Why Applying for Jobs Online Isn't Going to Work." But it seems like there's a lot of people that still are holding out hope that I'm just going to go to this, you know, website, fill out an online application, and then, you know, I'm going to hear back on these deals. I'm not going to say it's never going to work, but I wouldn't get upset when you don't hear back.
Are you done?
I think so. I mean, am I totally off base?
Did you get that off your chest? Did you feel better?
Am I way off base? Do you need to give me a PSA now?
Are you a podcast host that's intent on discouraging fellow aviators?
Maybe.
Well, then you should message Dylan on LinkedIn. You guys could form a group. Timed it with the music, too. That was sick.
That was perfect.
No, I see what you're saying. It makes sense. I just, it's one thing to apply.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Are you educating these people on the forum, though, and saying, listen?
I need to. I've just been trying to post relevant information. I just don't need all the PM private messages being, you know, asking why they're not getting a call. You're not getting a call because you can't, you're not either typed, local, or you know someone. You got to know two of those three.
Sounds like you should put that into a little form paragraph you can copy and paste.
Exactly. So that's not true for every job, but in business aviation, for these big postings, especially that are like public, because look, the good jobs are never posted. For one, you know,
well, they're already filled. They're going to hire.
So, you know,
which is kind of sad, but that's the world.
That's the world we live in. But just worked temper up. Your expectations. You know, it's what it's like. You know, Max and I both own camper trailers, and we have a lot of people that, I don't know about you, at least I should say, I have a lot of people that ask me, oh, I'd love to get a camper trailer. You know, and I say, there's three things, and you need two of these three things for it to be successful. One, you got to have somewhere to park it for free. Two, your wife's got to be into it. And three, you got to buy it in cash. You have to have two of those three.
I might add four. You should probably already have the vehicle that can tow it.
Yeah, and you got to be able to tow it. That's a good fourth. But anyways, you got to check most of those boxes. So
that's good. Why haven't I heard that?
That's pretty accurate, though, right?
It's totally accurate, but I'm surprised that you haven't brought that one to light via another public service.
So look, I encourage people. Hold on. I encourage you to continue to apply for jobs online, whatever you see. But please don't be discouraged. And remember, unless you can meet two of the following three, you're typed, you're local, or you know somebody, don't be discouraged when you don't hear back.
And definitely don't complain on an open public forum. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.
This message was approved by Dylan.
That's right. And I'm running for Congress. All right. That was really all I had on that.
All right. Let's move on.
Yes. Next topic. Did you hear about our new sponsor?
Did I hear? Really?
Were you coherent for the last
show? Are you talking about the sponsor that I procured?
Yeah.
That one? No. Oh, yeah. I heard about it.
Okay. Uh-huh. Good. Do you remember their name?
Advanced Aircrew Academy.
That's the one. That's right.
Yeah. Advanced Aircrew Academy is a great sponsor of the show and provides an awesome product, which is their e-learning modules all online. If you are a flight department manager or somebody influencing the training of pilots, take a look at Advanced Aircrew Academy, aircrewacademy.com.
What I like about them is that they offer an alternative to a competing group, especially if you're a 135 pilot. You know exactly what I'm talking about that you have to do every year. Tell your chief pilot to mix it up a little bit. Maybe you want to see some of the new material instead of the same thing. I do not miss those days.
Even for non-required training, though, they have so much good stuff when you scroll through their modules that has applicability to anybody's flight department. So better yourself, educate, especially if you're a 91 slacker with no formal education requirement.
Exactly. They do it all for you. Aircrewacademy.com. Check them out. All right, let's get into the mailbag here. First, we've got to give a shout out to an old friend of ours, Max.
Yes. Our friend from college, Alethea, sent us a very generous donation. And Dylan and I both about fell off our chairs because it's one thing to get a donation, which we're always, as we've said 100 times, very flattered by. But then somebody that we actually that knows us
and knows how full of crap we are and then continues to be like, yeah, okay. I mean, we can kind of
accurately question all of our credibility.
Yeah, exactly.
But thank you.
Yes. Shout out Alethea. She was my instructor for my MEI. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. Fun fact.
That was a fun flight course, actually. A couple reviews too. Keep rolling in. I don't know anything about this person, but I'm just going to make a couple assumptions. ERAU grad 04 wrote us a really nice one. I don't know who that is, but, and then here, you want to read this one? This one's actually pretty good.
Best aviation podcast. Excellent mix of hangar talk, professional discussion, expert advice / guests and fun stories. Not a bunch of posers trying to get followers. one of us, I think, is a poser trying to get followers. I'm not going to mention names. Keep up the great content. Tail Draga.
Thanks, Tail. Well, we might be posers, but we're certainly not getting followers. So I don't know if that's successful or not, but that's what's happening. If you want to write a review for the show, we will read it and we'll send you a nice little thank you card. Appreciate that. Apple is usually where folks do it. Helps a lot. A couple more emails we got. Hey, fellas, another good podcast and congrats on the new sponsor. On the topic of stabilized approach criteria, something that either wasn't mentioned or maybe I missed it was the benefit in a two-pilot flight deck with regard to managing expectations. When I flew Part 91 in a Learjet and my colleague was coming in high or fast or both, a lot of the time you could find yourself wondering to yourself, how is he going to do this? We're pretty fast. Wonder if he's going to slow down. Geez, now we are high. Looks like the space shuttle approach. Whereas at the airline, at 1,000 feet, if they're not stabilized, but they are taking decisive action to be stabilized within the next couple of seconds, great. If not, call for a go-around. It really takes all of the guesswork out of it and makes it so there is just no good or bad guy. It's simply you were stabilized or you weren't. Just a thought. I know I probably should have spoken up by some of those Learjet approaches, but you know how it is when you're the FO flying with El Jefe. And there's no policy or procedure to back you up. Keep up the great work and thanks. And that's from Mike.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It's just lack of standardization, right? And being able to fall back on the book and blame it versus a human. The good news is you're high, but you're fast.
Yeah, you're high, but you're fast. Okay. So that's that. Thanks, Mike. The next email here. This is a person that used to be a pilot and now they're an IT salesperson. Guys, listen to episode 48 today. Entertaining and hilarious shows. Is a current enterprise software sales guy for a huge company who sells to other huge companies. I can tell you that business travel is not headed back to where it was, probably ever. But the money that companies like mine have saved on travel is mind-numbing. And the business results have hardly been affected, if at all. Furthermore, our customers are largely working from home in any case and don't want a bunch of germ-infested airline-flying salesmen in their buildings anyway. I bought Spirit stock a month or so ago at $24 right after they announced they were hiring pilots again. Today, it closed at $37. The smart money is on national LCCs, as you noted in that episode, Delta, United, American, etc. With all of those big, expensive, internationally focused airplanes are going to have to cut flights and raise fees on leisure travelers and hence permanently downsize. Do all three of them survive mid to long term? Anyway, just my two cents. Thanks again for a great show, Cliff. I would say that's a very timely email for the discussion that we're going to have on this episode.
Which we read this post the discussion you're going to hear, but Cliff pretty much summed it up.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah.
But things be changing.
Yeah, exactly. So great way to set that up for us. So thanks, Cliff, and appreciate
you. Do all three of them survive?
That's what we were talking about over lunch.
Yeah, it's whoever adapts the quickest and most robustly is the ones that will survive.
Yeah. Yeah, you wonder. If you had to bet in 6 years, if there are three legacies or two, what would you?
Probably two.
I think I would agree. But this has been a real upbeat episode.
Probably only going to be two carriers left. Who will it be? What will they do? Subscribe to our premium Patreon content to find out.
Where do you come up with the idea to cut this music? I hope you guys know I have no clue about any of this. And he just pulls this out of his hat with these songs.
So we should jump right into that conversation with Jason. But first, did you think we were done with ad reads?
Oh.
We have one more.
Of course not.
No, we've got one more. Speaking of airlines and ULCCs and all of these different pilot groups, you know what is the same for all of them? You know the common unifying thing?
Tell me.
It's the coverage that is available to all of these professional pilots. It doesn't matter where you're at. If you're at a legacy, ULCC, corporate, charter, anywhere in between. If you're a professional pilot, you need to protect that medical certificate. That little piece of paper really dictates how much money you can make.
Sure does.
So visit our friends over at Harvey Watt. They've got the coverage that you need.
Yes, by far the leader, something everyone should have. If you don't have it, figure out a way to get it.
That's right.
And hopefully to have it paid for by your employer.
That's right.
For more information, go to harveywatt.com.
One of our favorite guests on the line, Jason Duvarney.
Back in the house.
That's right.
Welcome back, Jason.
It's nice to be on this side of the microphone.
Yeah, that's right. What Jason's talking about is that he's a podcast host now for our friends over at Raven Careers have launched their own podcast. They are taking a deep dive, Joe Rogan style, into a lot of aviation topics. Tell us a little bit about your show, Jason.
Yeah. So my name is Jason DeVerney. I'm the host of the Raven Careers Aviation Podcast. We got really creative with that name.
Yeah.
Well, branding's important. And yeah, what we do, I'm a huge fan of long form podcasts. And when I first became a chief pilot at an airline, I realized that there's an approachability gap between line pilots and management pilots. And ever since that point, I've kind of had this desire to increase approachability. I talked about it a lot at a Watts convention a few years ago. Just having the comfort to go to a leader in your company and talk to them and ask the important questions. So earlier this year, when we started doing the newsletter and pushing that out, we started having a lot of conversations with leaders across the industry, former CEOs, former union heads, people in academia, people in the news, you know, and discussing these big ideas with them on what is the future of the airline industry going to look like? What should we prepare our clients for? What should we be doing? And I ended up doing an interview with Eileen O'Neill, who's a travel management company. She oversees a ton of stuff with, you know, these people that have corporate travel policies that they have to follow. And what I saw missing from the pilot knowledge bank, I guess, was an understanding of how travel works as far as big business goes. You know, it's not a VP going, hey, I want to go book a flight. It's we've got a policy we got to go by, and, you know, certain restrictions and certain things, and somebody else actually does all the booking for you. And I couldn't talk on that subject, but Eileen knows it extremely well. So I said, let's do an interview. And then when we were done recording, I said, you know what, let's just release it through a podcast platform. And then it turned into, well, I guess we have a podcast now and we're going to roll with it. And since then, we've interviewed, you know, a former FAA administrator, former Spirit CEO, some instructors in academia, a former VP of American Airlines, and, you know, the head of cargo for IATA. And my goal is to kind of be the voice going to these people, these leaders, and approaching them with the questions that people want to hear. So before I do an episode, I reach out to a group of people that I think would have good questions, and we discuss a direction to go and questions that need to be asked so that pilots have a better understanding of what's going on in the industry, and kind of giving them a voice to get their questions asked, I guess. And it's been a lot of fun. It's nice to share these connections that we've made over the years. Myself and James, we're both avid networkers, and it helps keep up the networking, and it helps helps pilots in general have a better understanding of the industry so that they can make better career decisions overall. And that's my hope.
Well, I want to focus in on one of the hottest topics that's happening right now in the industry. Well, it's always a hot topic, which is jobs, right? Pilot jobs. And where the pilot jobs are right now, we've seen basically cargo and the ULCC sectors being the main hiring as far as in the 121 world. So I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you probably know better than I do, Jason, but Spirit is currently hiring right now. I believe Frontier is hiring. It sounds like Allegiant will probably be hiring in the future. So there's a lot of positive coming out of the ULCC sector. And you did an episode with the former CEO of Spirit. And can you just share a little bit about some of the insight you gained from him about why are the ULCCs doing well right now? Why are they hiring when everyone else is furloughing and in trouble?
Yeah, well, I think it really comes down to two main things, and that's cost structure, obviously. One thing that we talked about in that episode that I found real interesting, and I highly recommend you listen to it. It's a course on its own. I mean, he really goes into a lot of really interesting economics lessons on it, which was a real interesting follow-up to the one we did with Glenn Hughes, the head of IATA Cargo. But the cost structure, the cost per available seat mile that these low cost carriers are able to do, you know, you'll see carriers like United or Delta dropping their prices down to these low levels to get the, you know, we're calling them the VFR, right? Vacation friends and relatives travelers to get them on board their aircraft. And I specifically asked Ben about that. Ben Baldanzi, he's the former CEO of Spirit. And prior to that, he's worked at darn near every airline out there. And he said that the legacy airlines, the full service carriers, when they drop their prices down to that, they're not making money, you know, and they're trying to compete for these same passengers. And what the low cost carriers are able to do is they're able to run these super low rates, you know, and actually be profitable at those levels. And, you know, there's a pent up desire to travel. And that's what is driving, I guess you could call it a recovery right now. It's keeping the airplanes in the air along with, you know, bailout money and stuff like that. But it's people that want to travel. They don't have any travel restrictions set by an employer or anything else like that. And they just want to get out and see people. Unfortunately, that's not enough to support the entire industry, right? So we're seeing travel to vacation destinations like Florida, my new home, hashtag Florida man, and the mountains, right? Or coastal areas. And it's largely driven by just one's own desire to go on vacation. It's interesting, this week, actually tomorrow, my younger sister's coming down to Florida, which I'm super excited about because I get to meet my nephew. But that's a trip that, you know, they got a little bit of time off, and they're coming down here because they get to stay at my parents' place. They get to see us, and it's something that they would have normally done. At the end of the month, my older sister's coming down, and what's interesting about her travel that I just thought of today when I was driving home was she bought that ticket for her family. So it's five people coming down. They bought that ticket in 2019 and they tried to use those tickets last year to come down here. And what we saw out of full fare carriers, right, was, and really most every carrier saying, hey, you got 6 months, a year, whatever, to use those passes. So this trip that she's taking at the end of the month is completely paid for already. So it's they're traveling on money that they spent a year ago.
Hmm. That's funny.
Interesting. So when we're seeing, yeah. And what I found interesting about it on my drive home today was going, wow, you know, I wonder how many of these people that we're seeing in the back of our airplanes are people like that. Sorry to take it a little bit off track, but it was an intriguing thought.
Yeah, for sure. And Ben, in your interview that he mentions his thoughts on business travel being reduced like permanently.
Yeah. What was the, do you remember the statistics? It was like 60 something to around 60%.
I thought it was like 19 to 34%. No, you're right. Permanent.
Yeah. He said 19 to 34% or 18 to 34%, something like that. And that's, so if Ben writes for Forbes, and if you search for his name, you're going to come across a bunch of articles, typically weekly, coming out about the industry. And what he was talking about was a survey that he and a couple other friends commissioned and ran. And, you know, they looked into things like, what is business travel? And they broke it down. And, you know, I remember one study said 20% of business travel is just people traveling from office to office. You know, how much of that's going to continue to go on? I think that's going to see a substantial hit, right? It's way too easy to hop on Zoom now. And we've all developed the comfort with it. So that's likely not coming back, at least a good, large portion of it. But yeah, he said, you know, from what they're seeing, what they've been told from those who were surveyed, 18 to 36% of business travel won't return. And that's a major hit to full service carriers who rely on those numbers.
Yeah. And I think this is why I love what you're doing in your podcast, is because what you're exploring are things that are maybe not so obvious to the pilot, the job applicant. When you're out there and you're at a regional airline and you're thinking about the next step, you're thinking, how can I get to a legacy as quickly as I can? And then I'll be all set. And now I think there's more strategy involved with what is actually the right strategic move.
What's interesting too, one of the other big, that statistic in the business travel thing was one of the things I was like, said out loud to myself. I was like, wow, when I was listening to that podcast. The other thing too is when I told Dylan, I go, what do you think of when you think of, like, when you're a young flight student, what do you want to do? Like, what's the golden gig? Is to go fly a wide body at a legacy carrier, right? Yeah. And one of the things that he was saying, he was explaining how much exposure legacy carriers have with those wide body airplanes. They're super expensive to acquire, they're super expensive to operate, and you have to fill those things to make money. And if you don't, you lose a ton of money. And now you have that, you know, this environment coupled with these narrow body airplanes with long legs now, right? And that might shift that whole end of the business too, because you see the A380's gone, the 747's largely gone. And now who knows what we might be flying in another 10 or 15 years. There might be very few wide bodies even available.
Yeah. And I mean, we even saw Norwegian, or, you know, a few months ago, and I think we talked about it in that episode, they parked their 787s, the most efficient wide body that's out there. Right. They're just abandoning that aspect of their of their business model. Yeah, they're extraordinarily expensive. What was neat, again, with Ben's background in economics knowledge, he's a economics professor at George Mason University. He dove in on, you know, what it costs to lease a narrow body as compared to a wide body. And those wide body routes are just, they're not being flown in a way that's profitable right now. It's a major drain. And there's quite a few of those aircraft parked around the nation still. Really, I should go take a look at the data on that to see how many aircraft we still have parked. Because, you know, one time we had 3,200 airplanes parked around the United States. You know, how many of those are wide bodies? Because there's just not a demand for them. And then filling them up, even if you listen to the episode with Glenn Hughes, you know, we talked about margins on long flights of wide bodies. And sometimes just having the cargo on that is the only thing that's given them profit on that route. So you need to have the business travelers. You need to have the people sitting in that business class section. You need to have the cargo, and you got to have enough people in the, you know, the cheap seats to make that flight profitable. And for those routes, it's just not there yet. And that's where I think that there's the most, you know, that's going to be the slowest section of the industry to recover from what I see and the people we talk to.
Yeah, I think we all see the airline industry over history has gone up and down. That's what it does, right? But now everybody's thinking, oh, it'll recover. It'll be the same as it was before this. And things might not, we may be looking at an actual paradigm shift in the airline business. And where that comes to light with ultra low cost carriers is that had previously always been looked at as like a stepping stone for a lot of people and things like that, where now I don't think that that's the case. That those are going to be looked at as destination jobs. And we've even had listeners write in and talk about it and everything else. And that's because it reduces your exposure to these ups and downs, just like we saw.
Well, and we should color this by saying that, you know, Max, you work for an low-cost carrier, I guess, not the ULCC at Southwest. And Jason, you're also a pilot at ULCC. So the perspective you guys have is really good. And that's where what I wanted to ask both of you next was, like you said, Max, 10, 20 years ago, if you went to that lower cost carrier, there would be maybe a little stigma, or maybe you would think like, okay, maybe this might not be my final destination. Do you guys feel like there's been a shift in perception from the pilot group at large as like, hey, I'm at, you know, my Spirit or Frontier, and like, I'm not going in, like, this is it. This is my plan now.
Well, people, I think what the deal is people now take ULCCs a lot more seriously. Yeah. And I think Southwest has kind of led that charge to a degree, because at a certain point, Southwest turned into a destination airline versus, you know, a choice lower on the totem pole, maybe. Yeah. And that was what factored into my decision too, was to know that Southwest has a lot less volatility than everywhere else, which isn't just about losing your job. It's also about getting displaced and all of these other things that affect your quality of life. And I think people are going to look at that too, to reduce their exposure to all of that, is by going to ULCCs, because now history has proven that their exposure to those kind of changes is a lot less.
Well, you guys know James O'Neill, right?
Who?
Yeah, he can be a little provocative in his writing. I don't know if you've noticed that. He largely released an email a few weeks ago, and it got a lot of attention internally at low cost carrier, because he was being really sarcastic in mindset, right? He's trying to reach out to regional pilots and telling them, hey, you know, some of these reasons that you're holding out for a legacy are maybe a little superficial. And I think a lot of that was modeled after me. You know, when I look back on my career goals, when I first started out, the reason I pursued aviation was largely because when I was a kid, my parents sold their house to a pilot, and I got to be mentored by him and learn from him. And, you know, he told me about his life and flying wide bodies over the Atlantic and Pacific. And I just thought,
wait, cool. So when your parents sold the house, did they just leave you there?
Yeah.
How did that work? Yeah. Hey, pilot, you're buying this house. Here. Yeah. Keep this kid, though.
I don't know how they structured that deal. I mean, that's a really good point.
Mentor this kid while you're at it.
I can remember sitting playing Microsoft Flight Sim like 1995 or whatever it was
in this guy's basement.
No, see,
rent's due, Jason.
He came over to the house. I was in a small town. The guy comes over to the house, and I got to meet him. He says to me, you know, flying that, which is funny now looking back on it, is harder than flying the real thing, right? Talking about the simulator. But yeah, I don't know how it was structured where I got to meet the guy in my own house, but my parents were definitely still there.
Here, Jason, give this guy some keys.
This nice man should be by tomorrow. You just wait here. Yeah. Move your stuff into the basement.
My goal was to be like that, was to be the wide body, a pilot. And it's something I pursued for most of my career. And when I started recruiting, I had the opportunity to meet a lot of these recruitment teams, talk to them, learn more about the industry. And what really did it for me, right, was I was a commuter. And when I started getting real serious about making the jump, I started riding jump seats and requesting the jump seat, not the back, and observing what I saw up front and talking to the people, because I wanted to make sure I made a really good move. And I was won over by these crews I was meeting on ULCC flights. They just seemed so insanely happy to me. They would tell me about their schedules, the way that they worked, you know, a 2-leg day worth 7.5, 8.5 hours credit. You know, that kind of stuff is amazing to me. Really great structure that allowed me to focus on what I thought was most important, which is raising my family and being home for them. And that's why I packed up and moved to a base. You know, I live in base now, and this month, 17 days off and 100 hours credit, you know, it's phenomenal. How do you get that kind of a lifestyle, and how long will it take you to get there? And then I figured, well, it didn't really hit me till I started flying, but I got in the aircraft and said, you know, this is the plane I want to fly. It's super comfortable. I love what I'm doing. And the way that the days are structured, the credit that you can get, you work hard and then you go home, and I love it. And there's nothing else I want to do. So it took me a while to wrap my head around it. But, you know, the thing that really did it, and I'm happy I did, was about 2 years ago now, I started thinking about what globally we've seen. And you look at the explosive growth of companies like Ryanair during hard times, and Wizz Air and Southwest here domestically, and seeing how resilient they've been able to be, see the growth over the years. I really feel like that segment here domestically, ULCC, people have finally learned that, you know, if you're buying a ticket on a ULCC carrier, yeah, you're going to have to pay a little bit more. You're going to have to get a pop, right? If you want a can of Coke, you're going to have to pay $3, $4, $5 for it, whatever it is. And, you know, it's not going to just be given to you. If you're going to check a bag, there's going to be a cost associated with that. And they've learned on some carriers, they've learned how to budget that into their tickets. You know, you're not seeing people getting freaked out when they get to the desk anymore, because they know that that just comes with the deal. And really smart, savvy travelers, and this is something Ben really led into, you know, you're being intelligent when you're buying that seat. It's an intermediate good. Your goal is not to have an amazing experience on an airplane for vacation, right? Your goal is to get somewhere beautiful and to enjoy your downtime at a resort or with family or whatever it might be. And the intermediate good, the airline ticket and the airline experience, is just something to get you there. So do you really need to pay $50 more on the total cost for that seat, especially if it's a shorter leg and you can waive a little bit of the comfort, you know, potentially? I like the seats we have personally, but do you waive a little bit of that so you can get to where you want to be, so you can really enjoy your time? And that's what we've seen so successful about Southwest. That's what we've seen successful about Spirit, Frontier. And I think all of that led to me making the decision I made of, I want to go where I can have a great quality of life. I can make a good living. I can be there for my family, and I can have job security. And I'm ecstatic that I made the move I did when I did.
Okay. So I want to talk on the job security piece. Now, 10 years ago, when many of us were at the regional airlines and kind of contemplating this choice, there were more low-cost carriers out there. There was less certainty of, wait, who is going to survive here? What is this going to look like? You know, And I remember, like, I had a friend that went to Allegiant, and he's got a great setup there. But at one point it was like, well, wait a minute, are you going to bet your life that they're, you know, are you going to bet that they're going to be around for the next 30 years, you know, and consolidation? And
well, and it's interesting. And then even the legacies attempted to pivot.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
Remember United's Ted?
Yeah.
And the shuttle and like song, all that stuff they were trying to do. So why didn't that pan out?
Yeah, I mean, they're great questions. I remember flying back, you know, being Commer, being based in JFK and looking at the Song airplanes and going, what the heck is that?
Like, I don't even know what
it was.
Delta,
yeah.
It was Delta, yeah. Those were experiments, post 9/11 experiments, trying to compete with Southwest, right? And it just didn't pan out. And I think the reason they didn't pan out is because, and this is a very, you know, ignorant point of view possibly, they didn't fully embrace it, right? We didn't see a full embracement of these ideas until Spirit, when Ben went in there and said, hey, we're going to go all in on ULCC. We're going to drop our chasm as low as humanly possible. We're going to strip this out and we're going to commit to it. And when that happened, it changed the industry.
Well, and that's what the difference was. Just because you pulled first class out of an airplane and
yeah, it doesn't
repainted
mean,
it.
Yeah.
You didn't change that much.
And the crews were still on the same page. You know, it
yeah,
was
and the,
it
did, and the culture is still, yeah, you know, all those things.
Yeah.
Nothing changed. So.
But let's get back to my original question. Now I feel like you can have more confidence. If you're looking for a destination spot, I think you would have a higher level of confidence in going to one of the ULCCs that they're going to be around.
Yeah, that's
in
what
30
I mean.
Years.
That is shifted.
That's what I think it should. 10 years ago, I don't know. You would have looked like, oh man, if I'm going to go work at, you know, JetBlue. Remember what was the one? Not JetBlue that started in, Jason, you might remember. It was in Ohio. It was in Columbus.
Skybus.
Skybus.
I applied at Skybus, man.
And I remember they had like a uniform that was like a polo shirt and khakis. And I remember a lot of people making fun of them and saying they look like camp counselors in the terminal. And just like there was all sorts of stuff. But my point is that there it was less clear like who the players were going to be and who was going to be sustainable. Now I feel like some of that ambiguity has been removed. Do you agree with that? What do you think?
Absolutely. You have these big organizations or groups, you know, like Indigo that owns Frontier. I think there's a lot more knowledge behind what it takes to be successful as a ULCC. It's been tried and tested and worked on to the point now where the kinks are ironed out. I think a huge thing that we saw domestically, like I talked about earlier, was just people would show up and they didn't realize that their bag cost more. They didn't realize, you know, that some of the creature comforts weren't there, and they're mad that they had to buy a Coke or buy a Snickers bar on the plane. But now everybody knows, right? That painful process of learning is gone. And one thing I brought up on the show was in all my years of flying, if I needed to get somewhere and I had to buy a ticket, I've only bought tickets on ULCCs. I've never paid for a United or Delta or American ticket because I understand how the process works. I understand if I put it in a backpack and maybe wear another layer of clothing, I can get there cheap. And I'm a cheap guy, right? So that's what I did. And when you see the passengers, you realize they understand that too. And they're looking for the best deal to get down to that vacation point where they want to spend their money. So coming to terms with that understanding through my career, really the last few years, I changed my focus on what was the right move for me to make. And again, I'm super happy about it. I had a client last week and he's interview prepping for one of our carriers, and his father works at Southwest. And the original career goal he had was not to go to Southwest, but to go full, you know, legacy type airline. In the last few years, and especially seeing the fallout of COVID, you know, they've been having talks, and to go to the carrier he wants, he sees it as going to what Southwest was, you know, 20 years ago. And there probably was some stigma that I'm not even aware of where, you know, why would you go to Southwest? Well, they've never furloughed. They're growing like crazy. They're making money. They've got good equipment and it's, you know, all those things. So his dad's kind of telling
the
same thing.
Everybody's having a good time.
It is fun. Oh my goodness. I have so much fun at work. Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
When everybody's on the same team, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And they are, you know, you have someone that made that move years ago telling his son now to make a similar move just at a different company because he sees that as being the future.
I think what pilots a lot of times are pretty short-sighted, and especially if you're beginning your career. Yeah, right. If you're beginning your career, you really need to look down the road and consider certain things. There's no way you can predict the future, but you have this massive growth of low cost and ultra low cost carriers that the legacy carriers literally can't compete with on the same route from a cost standpoint. Right. And then you may have a reduction in wide bodies, which is, you know, all the connecting service to those wide bodies. And if that international travel isn't there and the frequency, then you can't compete domestically, like where are these people going to go? Right. And so you look at those are threats to the legacy airlines and possibly strengths for the other airlines. So things that you should calculate and other stuff, too, even in the news recently that was pretty interesting. And I've said this to you before. I'm like in our buddies who are like, oh, they'll never cut it down to one pilot. They'll never be pilotless airplanes. And I'm like, dude, that this will come at some point. 100%. And then in the news recently, Sikorsky and FedEx were working on a single pilot cargo plane. And so that's something, if I were applying to an airline at this point and looking at FedEx, I don't know. That's something I would consider too. Because where's the first place they're going to dump a pilot, right? The airplane's flying over the water. That's what the public will swallow easiest, right? So my point is, if you're an aviator and you're looking at what you're going to do, look at everything, leave your ego at the door, and really take a close look at what the threats are and what potential benefits there are from each place, and make a informed, smart decision based on
that's
facts.
The ego. That's what I've been driving, you know, is thinking.
Yeah, for sure. It's easier said than done.
Changing your perception. Now, Jason, I've got a question for you. You know, obviously you work in the career services field. You do a lot of prep. It used to be when you were going to go interview at a low-cost carrier, part of that interview was the low-cost carrier interview team determining, is this somebody that's going to stick around, or is this somebody that's going to try and jump ship to go to a legacy, you know, when they can? Is that still something you have to prep your clients for, or does everyone kind of realize that this is a good place to be long-term, or what insight do you have on that?
Yeah, you know, I want to send someone in as authentic as humanly possible. As somebody that was interviewing people, you can tell if you don't really want it, right? So one of the biggest things that I do here at Raven is mock interviews, and I run it cold. I am happy to greet you when you get on the phone, but as soon as we start the interview process, I am not giving you responses. I'm not giving you feedback, and we're going to run through the entire process, and I'm taking notes on all of your answers throughout the entire thing. And at the end, we'll go back and we'll talk about, you know, tweaks that need to be made, whether you've done so you can run through our full prep course and then go through a mock with me. And sometimes we put people right into a mock when it's like real tight, and then it turns into coaching the last half of the session. But one of the biggest things is really being your authentic self, being confident, talking about yourself, exploring things in your background that are, you know, shameful experiences or things that you might not be proud of, or things that you don't realize are valuable, right? So we try to uncover those. But you know, James says it best. Aviation recruiters are professional BS detectors, right? And you need to make sure you're going in there with a firm understanding of what you're going up for. You want to be pursuing the job truly, you know. And if not, they'll pick up on it. So we try to reinforce the ideas of why you might want to be there to a point. You know, I'm always willing to share strengths that I see, but we want you to come up with and think for the real strong reasons why you want to be there. Because if you're going in there and you haven't thought things through and you don't have a good frame of reference to speak from on the reasons that you personally really believe that it's a good move to make, one, they're either going to pick up on it as far as you not being all in for that job, or they might interpret it that way, which is even worse, right? If it is something you really want and you don't frame it properly, and they interpret it as, you know, a stepping stone, that's not a great position to be in.
I've been trying really hard to get a ULCC recruiter on the show, and it's not going very well. Because I imagine they're just getting inundated with people, maybe even some of our listeners and some of Raven's listeners who have learned some LinkedIn networking techniques and trying to, you know,
I'm sure
work it a little bit. And they've just got to be flooded right now. But I imagine it's...
Yeah. And keep in mind, too, there's a reason why they're able to keep their tickets so low, right? They do run things lean, right? So you're not talking to a massive recruitment department. You're talking to an individual with maybe three or four people below them and maybe one or two other people that kind of cross cover, you know. So somebody that typically recruits flight attendants that can also come in and help with the pilot recruitment, or somebody that's recruiting for ground personnel or something like that. So they're spread more thin. There's rewards there for that, you know, growth and all sorts of other things and enjoying what you do. But there's a lot on the plates of these people, and trying to get them on the phone, you know, can be difficult. They're planning future recruiting events. They're planning changes to the interview. They're figuring out how are we going to do, you know, interviews that are via Skype or some platform like that, as opposed to how we do it in-house normally, and still get the caliber of client or caliber of pilots that they were looking for before, you know, because it's completely different to interview somebody on a platform like this, like you and I are on, you know, across the video, as compared to in person and watching them throughout the course of a day and how they interact with other people. So there's a big learning curve going on with them on how do I still get this particular kind of pilot that we want on our seniority list through that platform.
I guess I'm totally ignorant. So most of the ULCCs, if you were to interview today, it's all online?
No, it's multi-tiered, right? So there are organizations that are going to be conducting interviews via Skype-like platforms. I keep saying Skype, but you know, Microsoft Teams or something along those lines. And there's one organization that's doing a video interview followed by an in-person, right? So it's structured differently than it was in the past, and it's because of COVID. So, you know, another
don't they also do the ones where it's a question and you record responses, but there's really nobody? Have you heard about this?
No.
Yeah, United and JetBlue both do that.
They do that? Where aren't you responding to a question or it's a whatever, tell me about a time this, and then you record your response and there's not even another person you're talking to and they just review it?
Yeah.
Text it to them
and
or something?
A set amount of time that you got to get it done within. So JetBlue's been doing that for a while.
Really? So JetBlue, yeah. You'll like get an email that says like, here's the question, you have 30 minutes to send us a video or something?
No, you schedule an actual time to sit down and do the virtual interview. And then they have pre-recorded questions that they'll ask you. And then you've got a set amount of time to respond to it in.
Tell me about a time you...
I just think about if I were doing that, I would picture everybody like in a conference room and a big video screen. And they're like, watch this idiot.
They're all
they're
on
like
video.
Emailing it around and there's me, you know, all kinds of stuff going on in the office.
Oh my God. Because it's all saved. Yeah. We're doing all the work for them. This is why we can't get a recruiter
idiot,
on this
idiot
show.
Idiot pilot applicant of the week. And they're sending the clips around, you know, but... I'm sure that doesn't happen.
That never happens. It violates all sorts of laws.
It is weird, though.
That's crazy. So I guess I never really realized this online. You can tell how plugged into the airline interviewing process I am. So have you guys had to start coaching your folks on like video-specific stuff too, I imagine? Like where your background and your, you know, your lighting and all that stuff too? Yeah.
It's interesting. My last airline, I was one of the first to go through a video interview, and it was because I was a corporate pilot. All right. And my schedule was, we'll call you when we need you. and I couldn't commit to, I can come down on Tuesday and interview. Right. It wouldn't work that way. So I went back and forth with them as a company that I was really interested in for interesting reasons. And they said, you know what, tell you what, we'll do Skype with you. I said, all right, great. So we sat down to a Skype interview. So I've been on that side of it, which was interesting. But also as we got so busy hiring people and hiring people that, you know, I was a recruiter at GoJet, right? And we had to hire people that were living in Alaska or Hawaii, right? And sometimes we couldn't get there because GoJet recruits very different than any other company does. And they will actually pack up and send the recruiter to a city location or to an individual to interview them in person. They really like to personalize it. Yeah.
Jason, see here you've been interviewing a lot of people in the Caribbean recently.
Yeah, it's very strange.
Why are all these guys in Cabo you're talking to?
You got to remember, I lived in Minneapolis, so I was getting people like in Lincoln, Nebraska, Omaha, Colorado Springs, right? So
San Diego.
Yeah, lots of nice cold destinations for me, but you know, also Alaska, right? And we try to do events and get groups of people to come in together, but oftentimes we had to do it via Skype, or we were hiring quite a few people from the Middle East. We had a lot of people that were leaving Emirates, right? And trying to get back to the United States. So we would do video interviews with them. So it can be an awkward situation. So internally at Raven, we kind of leverage that experience a little bit and help people understand the awkwardness of the situation. But additionally, you know, getting feedback from recruiter teams calling and asking how things are going and finding out, well, it's obvious that people are looking around the screen at notes, right? Because gouge is out there. So there were people that were writing technical answers on a post-it note or something on the wall behind them, thinking that they were outsmarting the recruiter. And the recruiter's watching it, you know, your eyes on the screen and realizing, well, this person's looking off screen a lot. And it seems to be anytime they're struggling with a question and realizing that people are putting up answers that they think are good.
The far aim, just page by page on the wall.
And it's the reason why they're not getting the opportunity. So, you know, really trying to hone in, be yourself and be knowledgeable and confident on who you are, being able to tell those stories and not doing things like that.
Yeah, Jason, I have a question that you might have some insight on. So these airlines have these massive hiring departments when they're hiring as many pilots as they can. And there's all these, what happens when the music stops here? Like, what do those people all do when the hiring stops?
Yeah, I mean, I've tried to stay in touch with as many people as possible, but I do have quite a few friends and people that I just know across the industry that unfortunately were laid off, especially at some of the bigger carriers. So there's been some talent loss there. Yeah, it's kind of tough to see. I mean, most of them, pretty much everybody I know that was in the recruiting role that is no longer have found new roles at other companies. You know, I know one that went to a shoe manufacturer, right? It's doing great there. The main people at each of those companies, that the heads of the departments are largely still there. And they're trying to innovate and find new ways to find people, right? So these programs like United's Aviate and Delta Propel and stuff like that, they've kind of taken time to evaluate those programs and make sure that they're working how they want them to. And you're still seeing, you know, United Aviate interviews going on. You're still seeing the college students getting entered into those programs because they know down the road they're going to need these pilots. So low-cost carriers, they're looking at other streams. You know, Southwest is Destination 225. That's still going. So they're still continuing to plan for post-recovery and get that pipeline filled. I mean, just Frontier, you saw an announcement a few weeks ago where they signed a deal with ATP, direct hiring of their, you know, some of their top CFIs after they've put a certain amount of time into the program. So there's lots of thought going into the future needs, and that's what they're executing on. But then also just putting the time into figuring out how the heck are we going to interview now during COVID and deal with the restrictions that exist there.
Yeah, that was my next question. Was I didn't realize that some of the ULCC carriers even had bridge programs and recruitment programs and cadet programs or whatever. Yeah. So they are doing that. Let's say that, let's just try and pick the most average, quote unquote, dude out there that's at the regional. He's not going to be able to participate in some of these flow programs to a ULCC. What is it that they can do right now to help them position themselves if they know I do want to do the ULCC route, but what can I do while I'm in limbo? What can I do to make myself a more attractive candidate in the future?
Yeah, you gotta embrace FaceTime in any way that you can, whether it's digitally or in person, right? So previously, events like OBAP or NGPA or Women in Aviation were the only places where you could get that FaceTime with a recruitment team or a chief pilot or something like that. Internally at some companies, there's ways that you can get in front of a chief pilot, but I don't know if that's being honored right now. I haven't heard of any one-on-one chief pilot meet and greets that I've seen as a client, at least that we're helping them for that conversation. That's all kind of slowed down. So the tool that we've been using more than anything is LinkedIn, right? And reaching out and having those conversations. But additionally, a lot of these companies have Facebook pages and, you know, Frontier Airlines pilot recruitment page or whatever. And you go on and you interact with them there.
So you post memes mostly, would you say? Is that strategy?
yeah. Sarcastic, politically charged memes are the best way to get a job right now. no, I mean, asking the insightful questions, being human, having thoughtful conversations with them and engaging with them. It's a good way to get your name recognized, but it's something you got to be incredibly careful with because you could also get yourself, you know, essentially blacklisted if you say the wrong thing or you make a unintelligent decision. So being careful about it's really important, but engaging there also, you'll see soon, hopefully you'll start seeing those events come back around. You know, RTAG, the Rotary to Airline Group, it is open to civilians. They have announced that they're going to have a career fair get together type thing towards the end of the year in San Diego. So I think that's going to be the first one that we see. I could be wrong. And I think you'll see chief pilot meet and greets come back around as restrictions continue to get eased. Whatever you can do to get in front of people, show them that you want it, show them that you're passionate about it, and have those conversations. That's the best way right now. Otherwise, you know, you got to have a polished application, make sure that it's perfect and consistent, and you're showcasing yourself in the best possible light. That's the other way to get recognized.
We're looking, Max and I are looking at each other. I don't think I've ever had a polished application. Even once.
Yeah.
Guilty.
You're good at networking that local network though.
Yeah. Well, listen, we all have our strengths, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I think this conversation would be remiss if we didn't mention one big up-and-coming player in the ULCC arena that we haven't even talked about yet. Breeze.
Oh, yeah.
Because Breeze, so that's something that's going to be very interesting, too, because you look at an airline, and when they first start, their cost structure is the lowest because they got everybody on first-year pay and a lot of other reasons, right? And you got David Neeleman behind it, who's has a pretty good track record starting ultra low cost carriers.
Yeah.
And they're going to come to market here pretty soon. And that's another thing too, when you're doing career planning, that might be something to go get in the bottom floor of a new airline that if you have faith in their probability of success, that could be a pretty interesting
move too. That sounds good in theory. Jason, have you worked with any clients trying to, I mean, to me, this seems like it'd actually be really freaking hard to get hired there.
No, we've got clients that will be there, actually there. Yes. So we've been working with, it's interesting when you're working with an upstart company, because you're trying to figure out what their values are, what their interview process is going to be like, and learn all those different angles. You know, we focus largely one-on-one a la carte with individuals on really bringing your strengths to the table and building confidence. But
yeah,
you know, learning what the expectations are when you go there, and you know, largely every company has the same values, at least written down, but it's how they execute on them. And what you're seeing with Breeze is a hyper customer focused organization that's going to leverage technology to very, very high levels so that people are free to make their own decisions through an app or online interface. So yeah, like you said, with Neeleman, I mean, he's just been golden. JetBlue, people that made that move to JetBlue, I remember I met a guy in my jump seat probably about 2 years ago now. He's been on the top of that seniority list since day one. And you can't beat the quality of life that he's had for his career. It's unbelievable. It's a huge risk. I mean, look at the guys that, you know, went to Skybus. It went bust. But, you know, every once in a while in your career, you got to just kind of take a chance and see what will happen. And I think the people that are taking a chance on Breeze have a much higher than normal opportunity ahead of them, right? You got this long track record of success. I mean, starting way back. And it's the first question I asked in that episode with Ben Baldanza was, you know, why aren't we hearing more about Breeze? And what do you think about their business model? And it's a winning combination. We'll have to see what happens. You know, they've got the A220s coming, which is going to give them the cost advantages. Right now they're operating, or they'll start operating with E190s, which don't quite have that cost advantage. But I think they've got the leadership. If you go and just search for them on LinkedIn and look at the history of the people that are working there, you're going to see a lot of people that came up through JetBlue and these other carriers. There's a lot of knowledge that they've been able to pull and bring over. And people, honestly, there's a lot of people that just want to work for an organization that Neeleman started. They believe in him. They believe in the ideas, and it's hard to bet against that.
That's what I'm saying, though. I feel like that would be really hard to get a job as a pilot there right now, because I think a lot of people know that and they realize, like, getting in on the ground floor, that's huge. This guy's got a proven track record. The equipment's going to be awesome. Like, this is going to be a great place. I mean, is it all people with space shuttle time, or like regular average Joe's getting hired there?
We're seeing a lot of people with E190 type ratings and Czech airman experience, right? So they did a couple different hiring waves. They started out with, we want people to, you know, initial cadre, they wanted to be captains with Czech airmen and training backgrounds and leadership backgrounds. So a lot of like SkyWest E175 type pilots went over there. And they had a good foundation of people from that. And then they moved on to captains, and, you know, away from the training and check type thing. So they're hiring a lot of captains. Again, a lot of E-175, E-190 pilots. Then they were looking at captain qualified first officers. And now they just most recently went through a wave of hiring first officers. But yeah, they're looking for people. The people that we've seen that have been really successful with them are people that have big, fun, outgoing personalities that is just evident from the moment that you talk to them. They're really focused on making sure that they're going to have a great customer experience. So that I think is really a standout to them as somebody that can really showcase, you know, through the interview process that they're going to be there for the customers and that they're going to have a fun time on the job and they're going to build a really strong positive culture. I have one client that came from South America that was flying at Azul and he just wants to be part of something that's new. And fortunately he's able to make that move. So it's cool to see the people making that move.
And correct me if I'm wrong, for a lot of those guys, like you're saying, the Czech Airmen at SkyWest captains and all those, that's a strategic move they're making because it's not much of a pay increase straight across, right?
No, I mean, you got to look beyond
the pay.
They're
going there
because
they want to be there and be part of something.
Yeah, and people said the same thing about JetBlue, right? People that went to JetBlue in the beginning, it's like, what are you doing? I mean, they're paying below the, you know, going rates, and you know, there's people that are tossing flack at them for, you know, willing to work for the prices they are, but what they're doing is they're buying in on a future, in my opinion, and they're sure. Looking at it going, if this is successful, you know, maybe I'll give them 5 years where I'm not being compensated, you know, with the dollar the way that I could if I was flying in a different carrier potentially. But what about when they negotiate that first contract? What about when they're continuing to grow and you've got, you know, 1,200 people behind you? You know, that's a whole different thing than what they're going to experience in the first couple of years. So it's a long play. It's risky, of course, but as far as looking at a startup airline to go after for passenger travel, I don't really see riskier. It getting any better.
In this post-COVID environment, honestly, is probably mm-hmm. beneficial to them.
Yeah, and people aren't, you know, even with all this, people aren't counting them out, you know? I mean, it's probably a horribly difficult time to start. And they're not the only upstart airline, right? I can't remember the name, but I believe it's one of the former Allegiant leaders or something. They're starting a 737 operator out in California. So there are other carriers that are starting up now, there's these opportunities to try to get in the ground floor. Yeah. So you have both of us, right? Looking. And when you look at, I'm 36, turning 37 at the end of the month. And you look at having under 30 years left, which is a long time. I'm not going to discount it at all, but you go, well, if I were to go to a legacy airline, what might I achieve within that organization? You know, maybe real senior on the wide body list, maybe captain. You know, there's a lot of seniority list turnover coming, but a lot of people are really looking at being in the left seat of a narrow body, right? Flying domestically. And what's the big difference between doing that at a low cost carrier, ultra low cost carrier, a legacy? You know, you're talking some work rule differences between the organizations. You're talking some pay discrepancies, some that might surprise you that might be better at a low cost carrier than what a legacy has, right? A lot of people simply look at the paid dollar per hour on Airline Pilot Central or wherever they're looking at their pay scales times 75 or whatever that min guarantee is. And they're not looking at the different ways that they can leverage the contractual things that they have where they can, you know, credit much higher or get a better work-life balance. And I encourage people to have conversations with pilots at every airline and learn the pros and cons of them, learn what the actual progression really looks like and to do the best you can educating yourself on making that move. The more I looked at it, the more I flew and commuted and did things, the more I realized I really like flying domestic. And, you know, I just don't want to do 6 or 7 legs a day. I want to do 1 to 3 and I want to fly new equipment and all these other things. So there's a lot to balance out there. I will say my entire career, I've had this conversation a couple times. I've always been looking for something more. I've always been looking for the next step and I've always been trying to position myself to be somebody that is, you know, has the resume and has the contacts. And I've spent a lot of time networking and I am at a point in my life for the first time that I really, truly feel at peace with where I am. I'm not looking for that next step. I'm looking to make a career and I'm super happy. And I know that there's hundreds and hundreds of pilots that feel the same way. And I hope more people can, you know, do the homework, learn, engage with other pilots, figure out what they truly want to do and find that job, whether it is, you know, flying long haul or cargo or ULCC.
One last point. You had mentioned that if you looked at the long game, if you go to a legacy and you're probably going to end up as a narrow body captain, like for a lot of people. One thought too, that I think is another plus for these ULCC carriers, is they probably only have one or two fleet types. And I feel like the contract negotiation is going to be more focused because you're doing the same type of flying. So all of those work rules are going to be tailored to what you're doing versus if you're at a legacy and you just happen to be on the narrow body, like they have to accommodate so many different types and so many types of flying that they can't make the contract language be as best as possible for you.
Everybody.
Everybody.
Yeah, you got to have a bunch of different wins.
Negotiating capital has to be spent all over. So
that's a good point.
Yeah.
I mean, just look at Southwest, right? Look, I mean, that's a company too, where I don't know, 30 years ago, people are like, why are you going there? When they started out, they never left the state of Texas. Why would you go fly 737 and never leave the state of Texas? But
cash in their stock options from those days. They said, oh, I see. Interesting.
They've got a hyper focus on, they know what their product is. They do it very well. And, you know, I think that there's that we're seeing that in low cost and ultra low cost. They're not having to reinvent what they're doing right now. And unfortunately, at some of the full service carriers, there's reinvention going on, which could be positive. It could be negative. There's a different thought process that has to go into how are we making money? And, you know, it leads to uncertainty and unknowing. Right now, you really, if that's what you're pursuing, you kind of got blind faith in my opinion, of they're going to figure this out and they're going to do it because they've done well in the past. And
that's what people said that worked at Sears 10 years ago. That's what you see in companies that don't fail are ones that fail, or companies that do fail are the ones that fail to adapt to a changing environment rapidly and make some scary changes quick. So it may come to that. Who knows?
Yeah. And I said it in my episode too, like United, I've been really impressed to watch their leadership team because they've just been brutally honest with what the environment is. And if I was working for a company like that, I would be really happy to see that honest truth coming down and clarity on why the decisions are being made at the ultra low cost level. It's a lot of, we're seeing a lot of pilots, you know, conversations in the flight deck that are, well, I'm really impressed with the leadership team. I'm really impressed with the business model. I came here because, you know, I wanted to make sure that I was somewhere that was resilient in a downturn. And it's nice to see that thought came true. You know, there's a lot of renewed faith in the business model. So it's uncertain times in a lot of different ways. And we're all just kind of guessing, right? I'm still guessing, you know, hoping that my decision is the right decision, but the comfort that I feel is really nice. And more people, in my opinion, need to be open to the opportunities around them and don't be like me wishing that I would have made this move a couple of years ago. When I first started having the thoughts and I had friends making the move, I'm going, are you sure? Is that really the right thing to do? And now, you know, they're my captain and they were junior to me in different roles. But that's the nature of the industry, right? So, you know, be ready for anything and
check the ego, you know, play the long game, inform yourself.
Well, I think that's a good place to wrap this up, Jason. Really appreciate your insight just on being a ULCC pilot. More and more of my friends from school strategically made that decision and it's really paid off for them. And I love hearing that there are more and more people that are realizing like ego, stigma, all of those things, cast that stuff to the side because what's really important, you know, is
it's going to be a real interesting next 12 months and 12 years to watch what happens in the business. Cause I think that we're in for some changes. Make sure you guys check out the Raven Careers podcast
and Raven, we should Cruise also aviation plug, podcast.
Thank you. I knew I was missing something there. We'd probably be remiss if we didn't plug Ben's podcast after regurgitating all of his facts and figures of the Airlines Confidential podcast.
Comes out
every week. I've become a subscriber. It's pretty cool. It's short.
And yeah, that's what I was just saying.
And if you want to stay up on what's going on in the airline business, there might not be a better way to do it than that one.
Good insight from
those. It's entertaining too.
Yeah.
I do want to, just as a teaser, we're going to record again this week with the editor at large of Skift, which is a business traveler publication online. And we're going to bring Eileen back on the show and we're going to kind of do a deep dive on what is going on in the world of business traveler from the perspective of someone who follows it as their main career and is a business traveler, what his expectations are, what he sees, and you know what the future might be. You know, he's somebody that's you'll typically see on like CNN talking about the subject. So I hope to just give him more time than what's typically afforded on those shows. And then Eileen's perspective on all of the mechanisms around business travel and restrictions that are there and timelines on repealing those and what we can expect from that, because that's one of those things that I just keep pounding, because I think a lot of people aren't looking at those rules around business travel. And obviously I'm the dumb one in the room when I'm having these conversations. I'm trying to bring these points forward. So if there's questions you want to ask from any of these experts, please shoot us an email, reach out to us.
I'm looking forward to that one, because that's a very good indicator of
So if you want recovery. To listen to like accredited individuals in the industry, listen to Jason's podcast. If you want to focus more on, you know, our college buddies and unaccredited
stories
and
other things,
and license plates.
Then you know where to find that.
You know where to find. So we've got both angles covered.
Everything covered.
Yeah, it's all good. All right, Jason, thanks. All your info will be in the show notes, and great talking to you as always.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right, well, one more bonus segment for this episode on the ULCC topic. After we recorded this, Jason actually called me and said he had a good reference for us, somebody with a little bit of perspective to share with our listeners. So on the line today, we've got Zach, who is a pilot at low-cost carrier in the States. And before that, you had some experience flying some bigger airplanes. Zach, can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So basically, career-wise, I've been in the airlines now just about 15 years and got started in the mid-2000s in the U.S. and through the regionals. And then after 2008, found a good opportunity to, with all the stagnation, to head over to Emirates. And I flew over there for 5.5 years on the 330, 340, and A380.
So you got a little bit of international and some wide-body experience. We were talking earlier with Jason about people shifting maybe what they think their quote unquote dream job is. And for many of us, when we started the career, we thought, oh, you know, I'm going to be flying a 747 across the ocean or something like that. And maybe we didn't even really think about all that that entails. And now we're starting to see folks shift what they think their long-term plans are, maybe focusing more on quality of life and some other things. So can you share your perspective a little bit about some of the differences that you see from doing the long haul stuff to say maybe that some of the more domestic oriented narrow body flying?
I think the big thing is there's a lot of different directions you can go with a topic like this, because it is pretty complex if you look at the entirety of it. But if you go back to the basics, I think the most important thing for any individual that's listening is to look at what is your short-term goals and what are your long-term goals. Look at what's happening in the industry. Look at where they are now, where they might be down the line, maybe where your age is, where you might fit in with that, and really find something that works for you. So for me, when I went over to Emirates, I looked at I was 27 years old, basically starting up a family. So that's a great opportunity for me to do international, because I could travel for work, be home on my days off. So for me, that was a great opportunity to really go see the world. Been fortunate to be all over Africa, Europe, Asia, North America, Australia. Wonderful opportunity. So the big thing is be honest with yourself, short-term, long-term, look at it all there. As far as the flying itself, it's quite different. It's a totally different world. Once you go over that way coming back, there's challenges to both directions. So the big thing is if you're looking at it, I'm going to predominantly go towards a U.S. carrier. If international flying is one of your big drivers, I think you have to be honest with yourself about how much hiring has actually taken place, how much hiring is going to take place going forward, where you'd want to be based, and what opportunities are you going to have? Because the big thing is seniority. Just because you can fly long haul, you may be on reserve and fly once a month. You may only be the plug, you know, being the international relief officer versus flying the airplane. And depending on the base, let's say you're in Newark on a 777, you're only going to go to the destinations that that airline goes to out of that base. So seniority is a huge driver for quality of international flying if you're looking to really go travel and see the world. Some people may not care. Other people may say, I want to go to as many places as I can on a specific aircraft. So it really just depends on what you're looking for as far as that goes. But also with international, the big thing is going to be if you are flying quite a bit, swinging your body after a couple of years, it's something you'll definitely notice.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question. I have a few friends who do the long haul stuff, and there are the body, you, there's a toll you have to pay for doing that. And yeah, you may have some more days off, but if you're living in a different time zone, that can just make things more difficult where you're going to take a day or two to recover. Do you remember that after doing a long trip, having a long recovery time?
Oh, absolutely. Well, what I found interesting for me was when I first got overseas, I'd say our schedules were pretty similar to what you might run at FedEx, with it being peak operations in the middle of the night, reporting 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, taking off at 3 a.m., very consistent. When I first started doing that, I could get in bed at 3 or 4 in the afternoon, go sleep 8, 9 hours and wake up, and I was ready to go blast off to Mumbai or you name it, and with lots of excitement and enthusiasm. And it was great. After I started doing that for about 2 years, obviously, you know, Emirates sometimes can be a little bit heavier on the duty schedules and the block hours compared to some other airlines. After a couple of years, you notice you start sleeping a little bit less. You start switching into that window of being able to command your sleep to more of now you're just sleeping when you're tired.
Yeah.
And it for some people, they can do it for an entire career. And like, I've got friends that they can do it for 40 years and have the same level of energy that they had before. Whereas I found for me, after a couple of years, I said, there's no way I'm doing this for 30 years. And it's not that I didn't like it, but I just look at what my personality is, my family situation, what my preferences are. Even though I got a lot of enjoyment out of it, I was much better suited for Airbus style domestic flying, 2 to 5 hours. That is my zone.
So we mentioned some of the benefits of flying, you know, the long haul stuff, being able to see some of the world. What are some of the benefits of being a low cost carrier pilot when it comes to schedule flexibility and quality of life stuff?
Well, I think most people are pretty aware about some of the different flexibilities, trip splits, straight drops may be a little bit easier to achieve at different times at the ULCC. The big thing that I look at is if you look at carriers like Spirit, if the grids are good, you're able to drop down to zero. Let's say you're from Brazil and your wife is from Brazil and you have a month where you want to load your schedule up and then the next month you want to drop it down to zero. It's achievable for you to take a trip really without taking vacation. And that's a powerful tool for a lot of folks, depending on where you're at and what you need. For myself personally, the flexibility I found with us in our hiring window, my first year, I was able to do a straight drop for Thanksgiving, for Christmas, and then the next year for 4th of July. So the first few holidays, really, as a junior guy in general, I was shocked. And I think my family was pretty surprised too, when we all know how it is as an airline junior guy.
Yeah.
But I was able to show up for these holidays.
What do they pay, like extra holiday pay or something? Is that why it's easy to drop?
For the flight attendants, they definitely do. For us, not so much. But I looked at that for me. And, you know, really the flexibility, if you want to kind of work a little bit harder, it's easy to do that. If you want to drop it down, that's fantastic. And I look at that when you look at an entire career window, you're going to have so many events happen in your life. And it could be birth of family members. It could be sick family members. It could be you want to get into something else on the side that becomes a big hobby or even a side hustle. Having that flexibility to wind it up or wind it down is extremely beneficial to you throughout your entire career. And when I talked to a few legacy folks that had come from LCC backgrounds, despite sometimes the higher pay rates, depending on how you look at it, that is one of those aspects that some of those pilots definitely miss. So if you are someone looking for flexibility, I do think that the ULCCs provide tremendous value to their employees in those respects.
Yeah, that's really good perspective. I mean, the other thing is on the long haul flying, those trips leave and they're gone for, you know, 7, 10 days, right? And it's, you can't, with the shorter flying, you could just drop day or quickly maneuver and pick something else up. And there's just so much more out there. I remember even at the regional level when I was able to get in a big base, be on an airplane and be able to drop and swap, and it's fun. The only problem is then you get stuck on your phone all the time because you're constantly waiting for alerts. And
you're tied to Flick. It's an amazing thing. But that's where, you know, for a lot of folks, you can kind of pick and choose. And I'm one of those guys, there's sometimes where I'm very active and then there's other months where I don't touch it. And the beauty is that you get to kind of choose what you want to do.
Choose your own adventure. If you're, say, a regional airline pilot right now and you're kind of trying to chart your path forward, if you did end up going to that low-cost carrier without ever doing any of the international or long haul, I imagine you would have to fight a little bit of that grass is greener mentality. So there's no easy way to do it. I think that's part of what pilots do in general, is they always, you know, compare with other people. And unfortunately, there's a lot of information available on the internet to make comparisons easy, but perspective is really something that can be valuable once you've gained it.
Oh, absolutely. And the thing is you don't know until you know.
Yeah.
And the thing is, for each one of us, it's a completely different path and journey. And to try to put it all into one area is very difficult. So what I would challenge anybody that's at a regional and looking at Atlas, Coletta, ACMI, you know, type stuff, going to a ULCC, you really got to look at it. It really depends on your age, your expectations. And for some people, taking a 5-year stop somewhere is absolutely a blessing, and it's good for transition. For other folks, they may not want to be a career FO if they get hired at a legacy after being 50 years old. So really what it comes back to for a lot of folks is you got to look at your career expectations. And, you know, obviously shifting those goalposts is one aspect, but like for me, when I came back to the US, a big driver for me was I'd eventually want to be a check airman on, say, an Airbus. So part of me driving my career choices were those types of ultimate goals, not just tied to an airline or type of operation.
And Jason made a good point earlier too. He goes, man, even if you do the math and look at getting hired at a legacy today, it's quite possible that you may never make wide body captain. And especially with so much uncertainty in how much international flying there's going to be in the future, you know, all indications kind of point to maybe a drawdown in some of that international flying. Those young dreams you may have had of doing that, of being the long haul captain, they might not even be really realistic depending on your age.
Well, that's a very good point. And what's really difficult is nobody knows what's going to happen in the industry. Everyone wants to have an answer. But the reality is that for any of us to say that we know, it's not possible, because the reality is anything can change. In 5 years in an airline industry is an eternity. So the one thing that I will caution people to, as far as if you're going to be tied to a specific path, is if you go back historically, you know, usually within 5 years of mergers, airlines generally are smaller on the other side. If you go back to those Bureau of Labor and Transportation statistics, this last joining was a little bit different and unique. And so where my concerns are, you know, is, are you going to see 15,000 pilot legacy airlines? Is that going to be a sustainable path? Or was that a path where the economics were good for quite a long period of time and gas was cheap? You know, so if you do see the industry pivot and change, are you going to see 10 to 12,000 pilots at the legacy level? Or are we going to see 15? Nobody knows. Are we going to see 7,000 pilot ULCCs? There's a lot of varieties and things that can happen. So I think the biggest thing for somebody is to really look objectively as best you can, you know, listen to yourself and put yourself in the best possible position to be successful wherever that might be.
All right, Zach. Well, thanks so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot, Dylan. Appreciate it.
Yeah, great insight from Jason. As always, he's got such a good position of being a ULCC pilot, doing all the interview stuff.
Yeah, he has really good perspective. That's why I knew we asked him about Breeze, and he had some really interesting information that I don't think we would have gotten anywhere else.
Yeah,
that's at very least good. In our sphere of influence. So
let's talk about free money for a minute. Well, joining us in studio today is Young Christian, who is involved with the Arizona Business Aviation Association. Welcome, Christian.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me, guys. Appreciate it.
We brought Christian in today because he is the chair of the scholarship committee for the Arizona Business Aviation Association. And a scholarship window is open for people to apply. Can you tell us a little bit about all that?
Yes. So the Arizona Business Aviation Association, we've been doing this for a while, offering scholarships to those professionals, you know, that are interested in pursuing a career in business aviation, or students that are currently, you know, in flight training or technical training throughout the state of Arizona to kind of promote business aviation in general. So this past semester, actually, we awarded about $20,000 in scholarships to, you know, students and professionals in the industry in Arizona. And this past year, we also awarded a Lear 35 SIC kind of training program in partnership with Flight Safety down in Tucson. So the scholarship window is now open, and it's going to be closing in April, 1st of April. So we encourage people to apply if they're interested, for sure.
I think what I really wanted to do by bringing Christian in here was say, yeah, we're in Arizona, and this is open for folks in Arizona. But we're just one. The AZBA is just one of many regional groups. So even if you're not in Arizona, there's probably a regional business aviation group that is in your state. We'll have a link in the show notes. NBAA's got a whole list of all the different ones.
Yep.
But I just wanted to raise awareness. There are groups out there with money.
Well, you guys have both been involved with the scholarship, and what I was surprised to find out is that the hardest time some of these smaller organizations have with the scholarships is getting enough applicants, right?
It's amazing. I mean, it's free money, free money for flight training, for technical training, for, you know, AMPs, you know, CAM programs. So it's crazy that, you know, we have, it's a hard time actually giving free money away.
Yeah. I can't speak for other organizations, but the AZBA, when the one we're involved with, it's not just for people in college, like you would think, it's anybody. So if you're a professional out there and maybe you're a professional contract pilot and you need help paying for training or for a recurrent, or you want to get a new type or something like that, you can apply, or flight attendant, AMP. So a lot of different avenues, but I just wanted to raise awareness. Yeah. You remember we had Carl Valeri on the show. I don't know, what was that, 6 months ago? But they have this whole database of scholarships for like everyone. We'll have a link to that as well. You have to buy that one. But yeah, there's a lot of free money out there.
There is. Yeah. There is.
Christian also has the pleasure of being the other pilot on the XLS that I fly right now. So we fly together. And Christian, there was something I wanted to talk to you about that
What's that, Max?
A while ago, a few weeks ago. I show up to work and usually, you know, we say, oh, yeah, we're going to be there at 8:30. And I get there at 8:30 and he's always there first because he's just, you know, really very enthusiastic, overachiever. And I roll up and I notice on his new car, he got his permanent license plate and it was personalized.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
It's an aviation personalization. And I've been biting my tongue for weeks about this.
I bet you have.
So I just wanted to just, you know, kind of ask you about it. Where did you get the idea? Why don't you tell everyone what your witty, well thought out acronym that you put on your license plate?
Well, you know, I did, you know, get the inspiration from the 21.5 show, of course.
Yes.
And it's, you know, plethora of aviation license plates. So I thought I'd just, you know, add to the list here.
Really doing your part.
You know, you can't do like V1 rotate because that's probably taken every state,
Every state.
Every state.
I just got one this morning.
And I didn't want to be, you know, one of those guys that had XLS pilot or something on my license plate, right? So I don't know. I was like, well, what can I do that's going to be, you know, no one else is going to understand, but pilots might, right?
Right.
VREF, you know? VREF.
Very clever.
Very clever. Very clever. So we'll add that to the 21.5.
Yeah.
What would be funny is people at the stoplight behind you, they're like, VREF?
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 Exactly. Has anyone asked you yet?
You know what? First day I got it, pulled into the hangar, and a guy walks out, and I'm backing into the parking spot. He goes, dude, VREF, that's awesome. I like it. Everyone has V1 rotate and stuff, man. I was like,
let me guess. He was validated in his early to mid 20s and
no.
Was he on Instagram while he was?
No, actually, surprisingly not. So, I mean, yeah, it's stupid, but you know, beats having a number
I'm
plate,
just
right?
giving you a hard
so,
time.
No, I was told impressed. Dylan a little while back, you guys got to get your on guard for
well,
years.
Dude, don't give it away.
How do we?
I didn't tell you how to spell it.
Yeah, I was just going to say, how do I spell it?
There you're you on go. Guard.
Maybe we get, because we're all at the same hangar, so maybe then I'll get like you're on and then you get guard on yours and then we'll park next to each other.
Oh my,
right,
wouldn't that
I'm
be
not
incredible?
Gonna do that.
Come on.
I'll do that as soon as I start posting memes online. right after that.
Oh my gosh.
So Christian, we also got a lot of listener feedback on our steering issue.
Oh yes. Did you have issue. You been seeing that, Max?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, okay. That I've had people message me on LinkedIn.
Okay.
And the consensus has all been that we probably had the yaw damp on, which is valid. But on the XLS, you know, some business jets, the mode select panel is like on the weird, dumb places they put it.
It
like
is
down
like
on
the
console
pedestal.
Stuff.
Yeah.
On this, on our airplane, and since it's the newer one, it's up on the glare shield, on the dash, like it should be, right? Like on an airliner or whatever. So it'd be really hard to hit the yaw damp button from like starting in. There's no overhead panels, you're not like even reaching up. I don't know.
Right.
I'm not sure how we hit the yaw amp. So we flew the other day and I taxied out and I clicked the yaw amp on to feel it, and it didn't feel it was different. But that being said, the steering has been working completely fine now.
Right. And then they tell you that in training, obviously, like you'll hit the yaw amp at some point.
It's
hopefully you're not on the runway while it happens.
Total rook. Because it's on all small airplanes, you know, you'd land and forget the yaw amp and you try and stand center line. And
right. But I honestly, I do not remember seeing that.
Yeah,
or,
we talked about,
you know.
So do you guys, when you're coming into land, do you have to like disconnect the yaw amp?
Yeah. You correct. Use the trim to turn the autopilot off.
Yeah.
But keep the yaw amp on, you know, and then.
At like 50 feet or something, you have to click it off.
Yeah.
It's funny because I was gonna assault you with all of these emails in the show, Max, and be like, "Look at
it."
But you knew you were prepared.
the best defense is an offense.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, so you got a lot of messages yourself.
Yeah,
we got about probably 20 emails and then a lot of messages.
Which I'm not saying that's not what it was.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, I don't know how that could happen.
Did you turn both ways or did you just try and turn? And it was tight both ways.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know.
All right.
It is.
I guess we'll never know.
But anyway,
it could have very well been the yacht amp, but I don't know. I don't remember.
You know
that.
How we were talking about what was the, how you always start with the stupidest thing first. Mm-hmm. So I guess we now start that at the top of the list as the stupidest thing for next time.
Right. I guess. Hit the off by the disconnect button first.
I guess that's a good.
Before you pull into the ramp and blame the line guys.
Yeah. Come on, you guys. Oh, man. That would be a good episode we should look into sometime is just having a couple line guys on that have just been blamed for. I mean, they're just the easiest that people to get thrown best. Under the bus.
Well, not only them, but just for good like pilot stories.
Oh, man.
That you tell about other pilots.
Yeah.
Wait, were you a line guy ever?
You know, I did like a little stint like during college for like, you know, the winter time. But.
Oh, yeah. Didn't you work at Dylan's favorite airport?
Yes. Dylan's favorite airport.
You worked at Heber?
That is where I'm from. It's where I got my private pilot's license right there in Heber. So it's consequently my favorite airport.
Really?
But.
Oh, you hijacked me. I thought I was going to hijack you.
Christian was actually there when the Baron peeled over his head.
I was not.
I wish you could have seen Dylan's face right now.
Really? So
yeah.
So you like that airport?
I mean, it kind of holds a special place in my heart. I guess, obviously, because I learned to fly there, and you know, the scenery is awesome. But operating a jet there is definitely a little different than 172.
So you did your flight training there?
I did.
Yep. So you saw some like shenanigans go on there, right?
And, you know, I never experienced myself, but my other buddy that also did his flight training, their initial stuff, they did the whole, you know, opposite direction traffic with another training aircraft from, I think, the Provo Valley. So, yeah, it's definitely, you know, the Wild West over there for sure.
The crowned runway where you can't see the guy on the other.
We were just in Cabo a few days ago at the small Cabo.
SL.
Yeah, SL.
San Lucas.
And that thing. It's got a hump in it.
Like, it does.
You there's no seeing the other end. Not even close. Not even a little. It's like, it's kind of like the, you know, the Chinese and Russian aircraft carriers with the little jump at the end.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
As you hit that thing right on this airplane, especially, it's like right about the right. It's like rotate right as you hit the thing. It kind of launches you off.
Exactly.
I like cool. it. I've heard that's a good airport, though. The service and stuff.
Yeah, super easy. Great. Great. Fantastic service.
They show up with a cooler beer.
It's awesome. Passengers.
And a little table.
I know a friend of ours who needs that cooler of beer right now, actually. Oh, man. All right. Well, we got a lot of good content out of this. Thank you, Christian. Appreciate
Christian, it. Anytime.
Keep the clever license plate ideas coming.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll add them to the list for sure.
Yeah, if you have a good way for us to do You're on Guard, let us know. Send in your suggestions. We'll secretly get it on Max's car. It'll be awesome.
Now I'm gonna be paranoid.
Yeah, I know exactly.
Like, remember when we put the consult a realtor license plate rim on our buddy's car secretly?
Yeah,
and left it there for
I've seen
months, and then
he didn't know.
I'm gonna be keeping a close eye.
Is the frame more offensive than the plate? Like, if you've got the custom frame that says something,
like, I'm not driving fast, I'm flying low. My other car's a 757.
Yeah, exactly. Which is more which is more offensive? I don't know. We'll have to put a poll up.
I don't know.
Yeah. Probably the license plate, because somebody actually sat down and you're paying, you're putting a lot of thought into it, you're checking.
Yeah. And you're paying yearly. The frame's only one time.
It's like we said, my new favorite saying with business jets, because a lot of the people that were in this big rush to buy business jets at the end of the year for the bonus D deal. Now everyone, there's an article I just saw about people having like buyer's remorse. And I was telling the owner of our plane about this. And I said, you know what airplanes are? They're the gift that just keeps on taking.
I haven't heard of that one.
And he goes, yeah, I was one of those guys.
Yeah, he goes, I was one of those guys.
Because the saying we have at our company is, you bought the elephant, now you can't choke on the cost of peanuts.
That's a good one, too.
Yeah, anyway, all good. All right, well, thanks, Christian. A.org is the link we'll have in the show notes, the info as well. I encourage anyone that's in the state of Arizona to apply. And if you're not in Arizona, we'll give links for the other organizations.
And in case you're thinking about applying to help pay for your seaplane rating, don't bother. I've already.
Oh, really?
Well, probably yeah. I thought you guys said that that probably wouldn't be a...
I mean...
You wouldn't be at the front of the line.
Yeah, probably not the front of the line. We're not rolling it out by any means.
It's not worth writing the essay, huh?
You know.
All right. Well. That's right. All right. But thanks, yeah, Christian.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
Christian handled it pretty well. Throw him around the spot on his first podcast appearance. About his license plate.
So we're all in this shared hangar. We're in this like co-op facility. And probably like a month ago, I spotted his car and I saw his license plate and I took a picture of it and I sent it to Max. And I'm like, do you know about this? And I think he had just gotten it that day. And then we knew he was going to come on the show. And I'm like, don't say anything. We'll just spring this on him later. So
I knew he, I'm sure he was probably wondering why, because I give him a hard time about everything. So
that's a whole different episode.
Shout out to Christian. Yeah, that's right. I can tell you it is not easy.
No, to fly with you.
Flying with me the time.
No. God, I can't believe
it. It'll be downright exhausting, you might say.
Are you looking for a professional challenge?
Are you stuck flying with a pilot you think might be insane?
Have you ever wondered, is it humanly possible for the guy that I'm flying with to be able to sit still for more than 2 minutes?
Who do you call?
You're not the only one. Proceed to ProPilotWorld.com. Start a thread for support.
Millions of pilots are suffering. Who is there to help?
Do you fly with a slam clicker?
This might be my new favorite song that we have gotten. We could really
use. I'm going to teach my son to play this on the piano live.
All right.
Enough.
Do you have an aviation license plate?
Do you have a good story about screwing up your bid? Write to the 215 podcast.
We do need all of that. That's right.
Sometimes I feel like we just overdo it. I hope everyone thinks it's as funny as we do, because otherwise this is going to be a real problem.
Yeah. All right. So we were slacking. We didn't get a story from our guest this episode. So we were thinking about a story to tell. And then we were reading about the stabilized approach thing. And it got me thinking about a go around. So I flew the Saab at American Eagle. We've talked about this before. You woke me up in the middle of the night, pretended to be crew scheduling, and I freaked out. Anyways, so it was right about that time I was on probation. If you don't know what probation is, that's that first year you're at the airline. And then on top of probation, there's also something called consolidation. Right. And then you have to fly a certain amount of time in certain period of time. Right. So basically, I didn't meet consolidation because we weren't flying enough. And so they sent an FAA guy out to do a line check on me. And normally it's a company guy, but it actually was.
Is that how you get around consolidation?
Yeah,
you can check out of it or something?
Yeah. So it turned out that we had an FAA inspector in the jump seat. And we were just doing LA to San Diego, super easy leg. I had to fly because I was the non-consolidated pilot. I don't know, is that even a term? So we're getting
an acronym for that.
I know. Yeah, I have less than 100 hours in the airplane. So it's, I'm not super comfortable, but I take off and we're flying with this captain that is kind of notorious. He's been there he's at the top of the seniority list, but he's notoriously unorganized. So he has the release. And you know how when you have a release, you usually fold it up really neatly and then it's put somewhere on the flight deck where either pilot can access it. He like wads it up and puts it on his side of the cockpit. So you can't even access it if you want any information. Very strange. And he couldn't fold, it was the printer paper, American
had folded into like fold. 4-inch. Like,
No, it was just he couldn't fold it. It was just wadded in there. Dude was just on a different planet. So we're en route down to San Diego. And I remember about halfway down, I had an itch in my eye and I started rubbing my eye and one of my contacts popped out. It was like gone. Now, I don't have terrible vision, but, it was gone and I couldn't find it again.
Are you required to carry a backup pair of glasses if you wear contacts?
Yeah, I had.
Are you required to, though? Because I don't wear glasses.
Yeah, you're supposed to. I think if it's not an FAA reg, it's a company reg. And but I didn't. I was so nervous and I didn't know what to do. And I was like, if I reach in and grab my glasses halfway, it's going to look like I forgot my glasses. And I just like didn't know what to do. I'm like, you know what? I got one eye. I'm good.
Are you serious?
But my vision's not that bad.
But isn't it hard when one eye is being corrected and one's not?
It's not that bad. At least for mine. The statute of limitations has passed on this, I think, right? It's more than 10 years ago. So I'm like, I'm going to be fine. This is okay. So we're coming in to San Diego. Now, San Diego is one of the busiest one airport one runway airports in the world, right? So we're on our way in, and a Bonanza in front of us gears up on the runway.
No.
Yeah. So I'm on the approach into San Diego, and they're like, yeah, that wasn't like super low, but we were a few miles out, and they're like, hey, slow down. Like, we don't know if we're going to get the runway cleared in time.
Well, how are they going to clear it? They were getting the crane out there?
We didn't know at the time. They just said slow down. We didn't know. Okay. They didn't say anything else. And then, because we're on approach still, we're not talking to tower, so we didn't know. So I'm coming in, and then they're like, yeah, there's somebody on the runway. You're going to have to go around. So here I am, you know, with already my compromised vision. And then I'm like, okay, go around. So, you know, probably the first time I've ever had to go around in the airplane. And the captain is kind of scrambling. Oh, you know,
trying to fold the release.
Yeah, we're trying to fold the release, go around. And the FAA guy's been sitting in the back, kind of just staring off into space. And now all of a sudden he's super interested in what's happening. So this is when it gets really crazy. We go around, and it's San Diego's so busy, right? I mean, because it's just that one runway, and they got a million airplanes stacked up coming in on the arrival. So they're busy trying to sequence everybody, and they just leave us, and we're just flying west, like over the Pacific. The captain's trying to figure it out. And then the other thing that's crazy, too, is we're dispatched. It was good VFR everywhere, so we don't have a lot of gas.
It would have been great if you would have just keyed the mic and be like, Eagle Flight, whatever, we've made contact with San Francisco Radio on HF.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's see what they said.
So basically, he's scrambling. We don't have a ton of gas. I'm looking at him. Finally, I'm like, guys, I need to turn. Like, we can't keep flying west. And they're like, yeah, yeah. So he gets on the radio. They turn us south. I'm pretty sure we were over Tijuana at some point. And then the captain's got to make this decision because we barely have any gas. Like, we don't have a lot of gas at all. And he goes, we're going to go to Palm Springs to divert. It's not even an American Eagle station at the time.
Is that closer than going back to LAX? Well, that's what inland he said. And directly east of LA. If my geography lesson.
Yeah. And I look at it and I'm like, Palm Springs? And the guy's in the back and he's like, Palm Springs? And he's like, yeah, yeah, Palm Springs. That's where we're going. And I'm like, do we have gas to do this? And so I'm just kind of like, I'm just kind of caught in the middle here of this situation.
If he could have unfolded the release, he could have seen what the alternate
was. Yeah, I see what the alternate. I mean, I could just tell with the fuel because you basically, I want to say 45 minutes, right? You land with at the airline. I'm pretty sure that was our deal. Sure. It was like 45 minutes. So you do a go around and then you don't have that much time to figure it out. So he says Palm Springs, FAA guy is like, really? And then all of a sudden, as we're like starting to head east over the desert, they're like, we got the runway clear. You guys can come back. And fortunately, so then we came back and landed. And I know. Which is good because we probably weren't going to make it.
Disappointing end of the story, though. I kind of wanted to hear what happens when you're like, you know, about over Ontario.
Yeah, and right. Like, and that's the thing is, it's like if you actually were to fly direct, that's like all mountains. You wouldn't go over to Ontario. You'd be going.
Yeah, I know. You'd anyways. Cut east of it. But
so anyways, we landed and taxied in. And
wait, how long were you flying towards Palm Springs? Like
5 minutes.
Was there just an awkward silence where everyone's
there was
to
just
out
like I'm just like because I'm flying, you know, I'm flying, I'm brand new,
one
you
contact,
yeah, you know, one wonder. Contact, you know.
so you're just gonna let this guy hang himself?
He goes we're going to Palm Springs. I'm like, do we have the gas? And I'm like, and that's not an American Eagle station also, by the way, you know, like it used to be way back when. And so I mean, there was no really, I actually wonder like what the right call would have been there. Because I don't know that we could have made it back to LA. We would probably have to like go to Carlsbad was probably the smart move. Well,
I don't know.
But even that's like, that's...
If you're going to land
Miramar,
off,
I guess.
Like an off station like that with no airline service, then you may as well just go to Brownfield or something. I mean...
Yeah.
That
was a weird situation. That was one of those very weird situations where you get caught in something where you didn't expect it. Because you've got good weather and...
But they would have had to have an alternate.
No.
Even for a single runway airport?
No.
Under 121?
No.
That doesn't require... I like the 121 guy asking you.
Yeah.
But...
Check me on that, but no, I'm almost 100% positive.
I guess that's only...
an alternate, yeah. With good weather, you don't.
Is that an ICAO thing, though, for... I think that's what I'm...
Who knows? Yeah. So anyways, maybe they changed the rule after that. So then we landed, taxied in, and guy, every, you know, it's very silent in the cockpit. Everyone gets off the plane. And then the FAA guy goes... He looks at me and he goes... why don't you go into the terminal and hang out for a little bit? And so I went inside, very happy to oblige. And then he and the captain had a quite lengthy debrief.
And then what? Did you talk to him again or no?
You know what? I think that was the end of my trip because then they deadheaded me because I was just doing this one.
So you didn't talk to the captain?
No,
you didn't debrief? Get the debrief on the debrief?
No, I was gone. But that probably wasn't super pleasant.
We're going to Palm Springs.
Are you sure?
Have you ever flown with a captain that made an idiotic decision?
Have you ever tried to fly somewhere but you didn't have enough fuel to get there?
Have you ever lost a contact while flying with a Fed in the jumps?
And not been brave enough to reach into your flight kit and get your glasses that are 2 inches away from you?
Have you ever had trouble folding a really? If so, you can find sympathy at the 21.5.
That's right. Podcast. We're here for you. Oh, man. All right. We've got to be almost out of stories at this point. So we need our listeners to come help us.
I have a bunch more, yeah, but I just don't think the statute of limitations is expired.
It's expired on that one. I got to look that one up. I got to look in the ops manual and make sure. But all right. Well, I think that's going to do it for us. It's been another exciting episode of the 21.5 show. I'm going on vacation after this, so.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
Spring break, baby. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yeah. info@215podcast.com if you want to get a hold of us. Thanks to Jason Duvarney. All of his information will be in show notes. And, of course, our friends at Advanced Air Crew Academy.
And Harvey Watt.
We'll see you in a couple weeks, guys. Until then, remember,
flexibility is the key to air power.
And diversions.
And you.
God.